Stories to share with you. Good afternoon. This is John Williams, and you are listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll be here until 1 o'clock. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman, and the Wintrust Business Lunch comes your way weekdays from noon to 1. Lots of ground to cover today, so let's dive right into some of the jobs market numbers as well. We're talking with Paul Nolte once again. Paul, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well, enjoying a little sunshine in the big city.
Yeah, no kidding. Senior Vice President of Kingsview Wealth Management. Visit kingsview.com. Let's start with the jobs numbers. 1.48 million Americans filed for unemployment. What did I see? How many weeks in a row now have we seen a million plus? It's been, I think, 14 or so, right?
Yeah, it's been a while, and more importantly are the ongoing or what they call continuing claims. And so those are people that are on, that are receiving benefits, and we'd like to see that number come down. It obviously shot way up. We've got 20 million, just under 20 million right now, that are receiving benefits. But the biggest concern for us is that that number is not dropping that quickly, which means people are not moving from furloughed or being unemployed to being employed. And so we'd like to see that number come down much more, which means next week's jobs number, which comes out next Thursday because Friday's the holiday, will probably continue to show a very high unemployment rate.
I'm a little surprised by that, to be honest with you. I mean, not every place is Illinois, but Illinois has been doing well, and I know what's happening in other states, but I just thought that the economies were reopening, you know, prudently or otherwise. I thought people were going back to work.
They are, but they're not. Again, a lot of them are still in furlough. Some of them kind of in that in between, or I'm not bringing as many people back as I originally laid off early on because I'm not opening up 100% of my business. So and that's really the telltale sign for us as to how many people are really coming back into the workforce. We'd like to see that number come down. It's only coming down 1 to 2% a week. We'd really like to see 3, 4, 5% and get it down well under 10 million. For reference point, it was around 2 million on a regular basis prior to the COVID virus and in an ongoing basis for the last couple of years, 1.5 to 2 million. So at 2018, 19 million, we're still a long way away from normal.
2 or 3 million were the number of people that previously would be claiming unemployment. Now it's 20 million. Is that what you're saying?
Right, right. That are on the what they call continuing claims.
Right. And yeah. I appreciate your note about how interested you are in that number, but I'm kind of interested too in just what the total number of people are. And when we say 1.4 million more, does that literally mean that whatever the total was last week, another new batch of 1.4 million people applied for unemployment?
Right. Right. And that's why that number is not, and that's part of the reason why that number is not coming down as quickly as we'd like to see.
Here's the stock market report today, which isn't as bad as it was yesterday, but I'm looking at a story at marketwatch.com about how these spikes in coronavirus cases are now affecting the market as well. Are they kind of going hand in hand?
Certain extent, and yesterday was really the first time the markets kind of paid attention to it. You know, up to this point, so well, you know, the economies are opening up, you know, businesses are getting back to some semblance of normal and kind of figuring out what's going on. This is all good. The economic data in general has been much better than expected. And so that's all good for the stock market. Yesterday we saw data from Florida, Texas, California, Arizona that they're seeing spikes in cases. And then what the next step for the market is looking and saying, well, that means then that economic activity is going to have to be reined in and pulled back on because we're not opening up as well or as easily as we thought.
I'm shaking my fist at some of those states. I got to be honest with you. One last note from you then, Paul. What advice do you have for savers, for investors, people that are just watching their nest eggs?
Yeah, and it really comes down to the market's going to be very volatile through the summer months into the fall, and be comfortable and understand the markets can go down 5-10%, and if you cannot withstand that in your stock portfolio, then you need to be a little bit more conservative in your allocation. So, you know, everybody's good with stocks right now because it's been doing very well. Just understand that it's not going to be that way always. So it makes sense to rebalance the portfolio back and buy a little bit more bonds, a little bit more safety, and take some of those profits that we've gotten over the last 6 to 8 weeks off the table.
Nice to talk to you today, Paul. Thanks for your help. We'll visit again.
We'll chat soon. Thank you.
Paul Nolte is a Senior Vice President with Kingsview Wealth Management. Visit kingsview.com. Sort of like somebody said to us last week, it's not why is the market so high, it's why isn't it lower? That's the sort of question, but we'll take it as we can get it. It's 12:19 on WGN. I'm John Williams. Ian Schur joins us frequently on the Wintrust Business Lunch. There he is again. Ian, I'm going to start out with another little personal complaint. My wife got that new tablet. She got her new iPad. And what do you know? The charger for that is different than the old charger and the old one. So now that thing that I paid for doesn't even have that use for me. And if the cord goes bad, I can't use the old cord. I got to get a new cord.
Yes, that's true. To be fair, Apple is the old cord you were using was called Lightning. It was a proprietary cord Apple invented, partially because it was so thin and small, and also it was waterproof, something that they've been trying to push. But when it comes to the iPad Pro and a lot of their computers, right, even the MacBook Pro now and the MacBooks, they all have what's called USB-C, which is what your wife has in her new laptop or in her new tablet. And that USB-C cord is much more standardized. Almost all of the computers that are sold today have it now, and increasingly a lot of the phones being sold use it as well. So the benefit is it's one cord that when you buy it, it's going to work on a lot of devices, and hopefully in the next 5 years or so, almost everything we own will connect through it.
That's interesting. I will say this, it charges more quickly. Maybe that's a function of the battery or the cord, but that thing does take a lot quicker, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's actually a function of the brick that they sent along with it. So one of the things that they have to do is, and we've written about this on CNET before, what happens is that they have to build in smarts that allow more energy to be sent to the battery without making it unstable and might explode. And they're always fine-tuning that. And every once in a while, they get a lot better at it, and that's what you're experiencing.
Ian Schur is on the phone line, by the way. He's an editor-at-large at CNET. Visit CNET.com. It does make me think a little bit about this story I saw on your site. The tech industry often refers to Apple's ecosystem of devices as a walled garden. It's once you're in the Apple garden, it's hard to get out. And you may like it there, but it's hard to get out. And that's sort of how I feel once I buy any of their products.
Yes, absolutely. And in this last week, we've had the walled garden get a little higher. So they announced at their Worldwide Developers Conference, which is this annual event they usually hold in California, although as we've all experienced, no one's going anywhere, so it was completely digital. And one of the things that they announced in it was all of these new features that are coming to the iPhone, the iPad, and the Mac in the next few months. They're going to come in the fall. And they announced new chips that are going to power their computers that are different from the ones that they've been using in the past. And in each of these instances with these new features, for example, you know, they've made it so that there's this little button if you have an iPhone and you're opening up an app that says sign in with Apple. That's designed to allow you to kind of log into apps and websites more securely. Well, now they're going to allow you to connect with those websites even more. They're doing stuff like making it so that your phone can turn into a car key, which I think is pretty nifty. It's using similar technology to Apple Pay and Samsung Pay and everything else Pay. But one of the things Apple is doing differently is that in addition to turning it into a car key, you can iMessage send that car key to someone else and allow them to use it for like a day or something. So if a friend's picking up your car at the airport, that's pretty cool.
That is a good idea.
Yeah, so there's a lot of those things that Apple's doing that you know, it's really nifty stuff. And that's part of what the challenge is when you're using Apple products. And I've been covering Apple for over a decade now. You know, one of the big challenges a lot of people have is that, yes, it's really good stuff when you're using all Apple. And, you know, you have an Apple computer, you have an Apple laptop, you have an Apple tablet and a phone. But what happens is that it makes it harder to use other stuff outside of that, right? iMessage, for example, their secure messaging system that I just mentioned you can send your car key through, that only works on Apple products. And so if you buy a Windows machine or you buy a phone not made by Apple, it suddenly doesn't work. So it's those kind of things that are tough.
And I guess a calculated risk for them, too, right? Because then it makes it less maybe helpful. Maybe it narrows its audience, or maybe it draws people in because they want to have all of that technology.
Yeah, it's definitely a double-edged sword. And, you know, this is not happening in a vacuum. We're at a time when governments around the world are none too happy with the tech world. And, for example, the European Union has opened two investigations into how Apple treats its outside developers. And Apple has also been very much under the scrutiny of the United States government over how it handles encryption. All of these things add up, right? And they turn into pressure on Apple about how it operates. And maybe these things will change, but, you know, right now they're actually getting even more closed and creating more features that you don't get to use if you're not an Apple user.
On the iOS 14 version we're talking about, that key, that fob technology, doesn't work on all cars yet, right? I mean, that's very limited.
No.
I think it was just on BMWs.
I would love if it did. No, it's only going to come out right now in BMW's 5 Series, I think it is, in the next couple of months, and only new cars. But Apple has formed an alliance with a number of car makers, including Ford and BMW, and I imagine more as time goes on. And what they're going to do is that they're going to make it so that this technology hopefully is something that is broadly adopted. And it's worth noting, by the way, you know, a lot of people say, well, gosh, using my phone with my car, that seems like a dangerous idea. One of the things about Apple Pay that we've learned is that the way it's designed actually is more secure than using a credit card generally. And this key fob technology, although I haven't seen all the details, the way that Apple's talked about it so far seems to use very similar, which means it may actually be more secure than your key fob, which would be rather amazing.
Are these companies, Google and Facebook and Apple and everybody, are they getting involved in the gaming industry very much? Can you talk about that at all?
Yes, they are all getting into the gaming industry really hard. One of the things that's going on is that we're in this period where the video game industry has kind of been thrown into a little bit of change. So the Xbox and the PlayStation, there are new versions of it coming out in the fall, the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X. And these are huge changes. They happen every 7 years or so. But when they happen, they offer an opportunity for everyone to get involved in it. So, for example, Facebook and Microsoft have struck an agreement. Facebook used to have this thing, or Microsoft used to have this thing where you could stream games online and people would watch you play, and it's a very popular thing to do. Well, Microsoft sold all of that business to Facebook, and now Facebook is going to become a big player in the online gaming world. Same thing, Google's trying to push hard on this. Amazon owns Twitch, which is the largest streaming company out there. So there's a lot of pressure from everyone to try and get into this because the video game industry is one of the fastest growing entertainment industries on the planet, and it's larger than music and movies combined.
What about gambling? Are these social platforms getting involved in that? Will they have any entree there?
Yeah, so there is actually efforts in a number of states to allow online gambling and gambling over video games. It's something that is still being debated in a lot of courthouses, and in fact, legislatures around the world are now discussing whether or not to set restrictions on what games can do and how the gambling works and what gambling experiences you might have. So you may not even win money, but still the way that they experience gambling in the game might be a problem. So there's still a lot of debate about it. We're not living in the digital Las Vegas yet.
Yeah, which is it's where my mind is right now. Like, I'm wondering, the NFL, if I wanted to bet on a game, could the NFL have a page on Facebook where I could place bets.
In the future they might. At the moment, a number of states don't allow for that. But there are more states today than there were a couple of years ago allowing it. And as those states open up sports betting, you can bet that there are going to be a lot of companies out there that come up with ways to do it. By the way, it's worth noting, fantasy football, which in a lot of ways is kind of a fun version of sports betting, right? Fantasy football is one of the largest side things to football in the world. It's huge. Yeah. It's a multi-million-dollar industry. There are apps, there are websites, there's blogs and news and everything revolving around it. There was even a hit TV show that I used to enjoy called The League. So there's definitely something to keep in mind that this is already a rather large industry primed to even get larger.
In our last minute, just talk briefly, Ian, about Google employees demanding an end to police contracts. They sent a letter to the CEO, I guess, right?
Yes. We've been seeing the tech industry employees really push back on their companies, saying they don't want them to get involved in military contracts and police contracts. And we often hear them say, you know, I don't want to build technology that kills people. And this is what's happening with Google. You know, there's a lot of pressure right now with the Black Lives Matter movement and the defund the police movements to start re-examining how police are handled in this country. And obviously, these Google employees have said that they do not want to support the police in the way that they have been. We have examples on CNET of what those kind of contracts have been, but it's worth noting that we're probably going to see more of this.
Well, then, let's talk about that another day then, Ian. Thanks for your time today, and keep up the good work over at CNET.
Absolutely. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Ian Schur joins us each week. He's the editor-at-large over at CNET.com. By the way, I was talking to a friend who is in business this week, and he participated with his company in the PPP program. I'm reading at Forbes.com right now. Time is running out on the Paycheck Protection Program. June 30th is the deadline for small businesses to apply for forgivable PPP loans. Even for businesses now reopening, the PPP is still available as a source of COVID-19 financial relief. But my friend was telling me about the frustration he has when he first borrowed the money. When he first received the money, he felt that he would not have to pay it back, and they have spent the money. Now, he's not certain. It appears though the rules may be changing. You may have questions along these lines yourself. Larry Chester is the founder and president of CFO Simplified. He's been studying and helping people with these issues. Hey, welcome to the show, Larry. How are you today?
I'm doing great, John. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Does my explanation of the conversation I just had with my friend make sense to you? Are you hearing something along those lines?
Well, I think that the people who've gotten PPP loans really fall into two camps. The ones that say, hey, look, this is a 1% loan from the government. I need the money to keep my business alive. And those who say, look, there's nothing better than a loan that you don't have to pay back. So my biggest concern is, how do I get forgiveness?
Sure, but I mean, those are two entirely different things. And was it clear to the people that were getting the money what it was? Is it a loan, even at 1%, you got to pay it back? Or is it a grant? Is it just a gift?
Thing is that it was really intended for businesses to use to pay their employees, to bring their employees back and pay them, even though they didn't have any work for them to do. The expectation was that companies would use that money to pay that payroll so that people had money to be able to pay their rent, buy food, and those kinds of things. There was also the ability to be able to use some of that money and still get it forgiven for overhead expenses for the company. They've made the restrictions on forgivability, if you want to call it that, much easier and much more flexible with this latest Flexibility Act that they've passed. So, for instance, originally you had to spend 75% of the money that you received from the PPP on payroll to be able to get it forgiven. And now they've reduced that to 60%. So if you spend 60% of the funds on payroll, then you can still get it 100% forgiven. But that's really the key, is that Congress has made these restrictions much more flexible over time. So, for instance, this last law that was passed made several very significant changes. First of all, they extended the maturity date on the loan, if you took it as a loan and needed to pay it back, from 2 years to 5 years, giving you an additional 3 years to pay that loan back. Second of all, if you were using it for covered expenses, you'd be able and expected to get forgiveness for it. They extended that payment time, that time that you could use the funds, from 8 weeks to 24 weeks. So, for instance, if you were in the initial funding scheme, you would currently be at the end of that 8-week period. But if you were a restaurant and got that money, you haven't even opened yet, so you haven't had a chance to spend that money. So Congress has extended that now to 24 weeks, which really takes you well out towards the end of the year and being able to spend that money and still get it 100% forgiven.
Sort of, man. Go ahead, Larry. Keep going. No, pardon me. Go right ahead, sir.
And then the third significant move was that they changed the amount of forgiveness to be set so that you didn't have to spend 75% of that money on payroll. You could only spend 60% of that money on payroll and still get it 100% forgiven if that other 40% was spent for certain restricted overhead expenses like rent or interest on a mortgage or utility payments. And then there was a fourth significant change, which is that instead of having until June 30th to restore payroll levels and to rehire your employees, you now have until the end of the year, until December 31st, to rehire all of those employees to be able to get that 100% forgiveness.
That all sounds like good ideas to me. Any red flags there, or do you think that's all good ideas, what they've done?
No, I think this is all very good ideas. I think, getting back to what I'd said originally, it really depends on whether the business owner is looking at getting the money to be able to just help his business survive and cover his overhead expenses, or whether he's really going to use the money for what it was intended for, which was to put cash in the pockets of your employees, mm-hmm. which was the intent of the law. And if they're able to do that, then, of course, you can go ahead and plan on getting 100% forgiveness. I know some business owners, like myself, for instance, but other business owners who are clients of ours, who have borrowed the money with one express intent, and that is to be able to provide money to their employees. And so they're not using it for overhead. They're just using it to pay their employees. And in those cases, the chances of getting that 100% forgiven are very, very good. The more of that money that you've spent for overhead expenses as opposed to payroll makes it a little more difficult to guarantee 100% forgiveness because of the other restrictions on how that money's being used.
Is that a negotiated thing? Do I sort of make my case like, hey, I had to pay my rent, and so maybe I didn't pay as much directly to the employees, but it's all money in the same pot in a way. Why draw that distinction? I wonder, do business owners have the opportunity to sort of make their case, or is it very rote and spelled out in the rules?
No, it's very rote and very spelled out in the rules. So, for instance, the money has to be spent during that 24-week period. You now have the option of either 8 weeks or 24 weeks, mm-hmm. but that money has to be spent within that period of time. So if you take the 24 weeks, that's 168 days. Day one is the day that money was put in your account, in your checking account, by the government. The day that money was dispersed to you is day one, and then you've got 168 days to spend it. If you wrote a check out on day 169, I'm sorry, that's past the cutoff. And there are very specific restrictions on how that money can be spent. So, for instance, for overhead expenses, it has to be spent for mortgage interest, not for mortgage principal, has to be spent for rent or utility payments or even internet bills, cell phone bills, utilities.
I hope that everybody knew that when they were allocating those resources. Perhaps they did. I mean, it's a program you need to pay attention to. As we talk about this, Steve Bertrand is listening in the newsroom. Yeah. What are you hearing?
Well, I have a PPP loan as well, and it looks like it's a pretty complicated, because you have to apply for forgiveness, and it looks like it's a pretty complicated form, right? Are we? And who makes the decision? Is it the bank that you got the loan from who decides whether it's forgiven?
Yes, it's the bank bank that's going to decide whether or not it's forgiven, but they're going to move very strictly on SBA guidelines, because if the loan's forgiven, they want to get the money back from the SBA, because they want the money that they borrowed from the SBA to be forgiven, which is the money that they've given to you that you're asking for forgiveness for. So there are very strict guidelines, and it's really laid out in detail. And to be honest with you, I'm more than happy to talk to anybody individually on what those questions are or questions that they may have. And we have a webinar that we taped that is on our website for the PPP forgiveness program.
I got news for you, Larry.
That lays out a lot of these details.
I watched that. I watched your webinar, and I thought, wow. How does this guy know all of this stuff? And thank God somebody does, because it strikes me as just terrifying and complicated. And for those of us who aren't real good at even personal finance, to then imagine a whole new federal program and how it applies to you is really critical. And it's good that there's somebody out there doing this if they want to watch it. So it's CFO Simplified. That's your company. Is that the website too then, Larry, CFO Simplified?
Yes, that's our website as well. And we have a YouTube channel that has the webinar on it. Now, the one thing I want to say, you know, you talk about the application for forgiveness. They've recently changed that. So there are now two applications. One is a five-page long application that's fairly complex to fill out. Mm-hmm. And the other one is a one-page application that they just introduced, which is called the EZ application. And that is just one page. And for everybody who has borrowed money and has spent 75% for their, or really more than 60% for their payroll, they can use that application, that EZ application instead, and that's much simpler to fill out and gives you, I think, more confidence in the fact that you're going to get your loan forgiven.
CFOSimplified.com, founder and president Larry Chester. Larry, we'll visit again. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your help today.
Not a problem at all. Good talking to you, John.
Yeah, likewise. Last time I filled out my own tax form, I think I was using the EZ form, and I liked that one a lot better. Although, actually, it was for, as I recall, lesser income as well.
I'll take one page over five.
Any day. Let's do the Wintrust Business Lunch Business Minute with Steve Bertrand.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Macy's is cutting about 3,900 corporate and management jobs as it looks to cut costs because of the pandemic. They say it'll save about $365 million this year, about $630 million a year in the future. A Cook County judge is ordering several Chicago McDonald's to do more to protect its workers. That's a partial victory for a handful of workers who've been complaining McDonald's isn't doing enough. And Chicago Inno says Chicago startup AM Money is making it easier for students from low and middle income backgrounds to get approved for loans that help pay for college. Unlike other lenders, AM Money doesn't require student borrowers to have good or substantial credit or co-signers. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
And back to Steve Alexander, who's in for Ori and Samuelson today.
Yeah, let's begin with some chortling on Ag Twitter. After shares of Beyond Meat dropped nearly 10%, there's been a bit of a rally since, but shares are still off about 5%. This comes after a six-month trial of Beyond Meat's sandwich called the PLT, P is for plant-based, LT, at Canadian McDonald's. The trial ended, and McD's said nothing. Normally, you'd expect if McD's was going to roll out the product to the rest of the world, there'd be an announcement, but no announcement this time. So the chortling on Ag Twitter, and that's how I interpret it, is from people in the meat industry who are happy to see Beyond Meat and other plant-based products fail, especially since the CEO of Beyond Meat has consistently said his mission is to replace the animal-based products completely in the food chain throughout the world within the next 15 years. No more poultry, no more pigs, cows, nothing. If you are anxious to get back into the theater, movie, or live, it may happen later rather than sooner. While some of the chains have announced plans to tentatively reopen mid-July, infectious disease experts are warning that is too soon. While you may be COVID clean and wearing a mask in public and doing everything right, you just can't be sure about other customers at the cinema. And then once the lights go down, there is no way that theaters can enforce the use of masks. And one disease expert called not wearing wearing a mask like playing Russian roulette. And then there's the air conditioning. In April, the CDC published a research letter linking the spread of coronavirus to air conditioners. And, of course, the primary way that coronavirus is transmitted is through close contact from person to person and the exchange of these infected droplets. The forced air from the AC could increase the risk of that transmission. Shares of AMC are down about 10%. Shares of Disney are down today, not only because it is reportedly delaying the screening of Mulan, its new movie, but also because Disneyland has been delayed in its reopening. Let's take a gander at commodities. Crude oil right now is up about 92 cents. That's 2.4% at $38.93. Gold is trading down about $4.50 at $17.70. Chicago Board of Trade has wheat trading 2 cents higher, but corn is down 6.5 cents at $3.20.5 a bushel, and soybeans are down 2.25 at $8.68.5. And in for Big O, that's your money on 720 WGN.
1250, this is WGN Radio on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're joined again by Amy Guth. Amy, I have to tell you, I knew that checks were going to people that did not deserve them because they are no longer living, but I did not realize it was that big of a deal, that big of a problem.
Yeah, this was really shocking to me, too. We all kind of had that hunch that's floated around a little bit, but when you see the numbers, it's really shocking. So a government watchdog association, the Government Accountability Office, which is essentially the auditing arm of Congress, the GAO, they have been auditing this and taking a look at it, and their estimate is that 1.1 million coronavirus relief payments to the tune of about $1.4 billion went to people who are no longer living. Now, you might be asking, how in the heck did that happen? A lot of it has to do with your 2019 tax return. So particularly people who recently died, if you, say, filed your tax return and then died soon after, the IRS kind of says, well, there's really no way that we can catch that up until we miss your 2020 tax return. So, you know, the IRS sort of feels like this is an inevitable lag they can't really do much about. But what's interesting now is this legal conversation that's unfolding of, does the government have the right to ask for the money to be returned? So it has asked. So if you got a check for someone that you have survived, say a spouse or whatever, you got a check for them, and you probably were notified in May, hey, you probably need to get that back. We realize what we did. It's unclear whether or not you legally have an obligation to do so. So that's kind of what's being sorted out right now, which to me is just one of those fascinating stories of 2020 to file under things we did not see coming.
You know, and I think there's an interesting legal and almost ethical debate about that, because if the idea of these stimulus checks is to stimulate the economy, I've been saying all along, and some people have agreed with me, that it really doesn't matter that much. Just spend the money. And if you and your spouse who's deceased incurred expenses over the year while they were alive, you've got debt, you've got spend the money. In fact, it's $1 billion, but we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars here. So just spend the money and don't gunk up the works trying to give it back.
Yeah, I'm on the same mind with you on that, John. I think it's another kind of glitch that's happened in all of this. And we look at like how PPP rolled out and how there was such a big public debate about who got that funding and who didn't and who was kind of left holding the bag and all that. This is just kind of another one of those, yeah, I agree, moral and legal sort of moments you have to kind of reconcile.
And by the way, I know not everybody shares my view. That was my own. By the way, are you also reporting on the Democrats and their convention that I guess is not going to happen in Milwaukee now?
Well, so it's happening-ish. It's happening light. The part I'm very interested in is, of course, the economic impact of that. But essentially, the DNC told state delegates to stay home from the gathering in Milwaukee, and they're working out ways so that voting can be accomplished remotely. But there's a big piece of that, right? There's a lot of official events. There's parties. There's reception. There's all this stuff that goes on around it. That has all been put on ice. That's not happening. Joe Biden is still going to accept the nomination in Milwaukee. He just will not be surrounded by thousands and thousands of people. It's unclear exactly how many people will be there, how many officials are going to actually make that trip. But for the most part, a lot of hotel rooms are being canceled. And this is, not just in Milwaukee, but certainly in Rosemont. A lot of people had already booked some hotel rooms there. In downtown Chicago, some hotel rooms there. And, you know, that just kind of makes you cringe because here's, you know, that they've already been hit so hard with, at one point, Chicago hotels seeing occupancy down in the single digits. So here's another, you know, where you're thinking, okay, if I can just make it to that convention in August, I'll see some hotel action. Not so much now. Unclear how many people will be there, but the DNC has said, hey, stay home. We're figuring out a remote voting option.
Wonder, too, I mean, maybe the DNC convention would work the way the president's stop in Tulsa does. You can throw the party, but maybe people don't want to come. Who knows? Talk to me about the jobless numbers. We talked about that a little earlier with Paul Nolte, but what are you seeing in the jobless numbers?
Yeah, you know, kind of about the same. There was a little bit of a surprise this week. It fell 60,000 to a seasonally adjusted 1.48 million. That's for the week ending June 20th, and that's according to Labor Department data. There were a jump in claims in California, Texas, and Florida. Of course, we're seeing surges in cases there happening, so that's not necessarily a huge surprise. But a lot of economists had forecast a much lower number than that. They were kind of saying 1.25, 1.3 million applications, and we're seeing 1.48. So it still dropped from the record of 6.8 plus million in late March, but it's still kind of another thing where it's saying, you know, that recovery we're looking at, that may be cooling a bit and not happening quite as fast as people had hoped. Of course, we saw that reflected in the market this week, too, as we saw the uptick in number of cases in a lot of southern and southwestern states. So I think it's another moment of wait and see, which has kind of been the theme for so many economic stories this year, really, but especially this last quarter, as we're just kind of going, okay, what does the next week bring? What's the week after that? What's the week after that? But it really, you know, I think it's sparking a lot of conversation about the pieces of economy. The Wall Street Journal has done some really, really interesting reporting this week, particularly about towns that fall on the border of states when the states are approaching this very differently and how that goes. So it's sparking a lot of interesting conversation. I think it's really important as we do eventually look towards reopening and restoring job numbers, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, and we're all connected too. We are being reminded of that this week, that's for sure.
Truly.
Amy Guth, thanks for your time today. Thanks for your reporting.
So much, John.
Amy will join us again. It's coming up on 12:57. I did see another story we didn't have time to talk much about today. Macy's is cutting 3,900 corporate and management jobs. It's coming up on WGN Radio News. Anna DeVlantis comes up after that.